case for argument is USO Corporation versus Mizuho, Mr. Fiegel. Where are you, Mr. Fiegel?
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Reed Fiegel. I'm appellate counsel for Plaintiff USO Corporation, and I respectfully reserve 7 minutes for rebuttal. The District Court's forum nonconvenience dismissal reflects a clear abuse of discretion requiring reversal. The District Court abused its discretion in at least 3 ways. Any one of those errors is sufficient to require reversal, but taken in combination makes reversal essential. First, the District Court explicitly declined to follow Supreme Court and Seventh Circuit law in applying the forum nonconvenience factors. The controlling precedents, both Supreme Court and this Court's, required the District Court to give substantial deference to plaintiff's choice of forum.
Why?
Because that's what the Supreme Court has held, Your Honor.
Why is it held that?
It is held that because it is presumed that a plaintiff's convenience will be to file the case.
Why? Well, why is the plaintiff's convenience entitled to more weight than the defendant's convenience?
I think it goes to a number of issues. It's an essential government function, Your Honor, that both states and the federal government provides courts for the adjudication of disputes, and typically a plaintiff, and particularly when the plaintiff's a U.S. citizen, is entitled to avail itself of those courts.
I don't understand that. And that at all?
Well, it is what the Supreme Court has held.
Well, I don't get it. Now, sometimes there are senseless rules, but usually if there's no basis for a rule, it means you've misunderstood the rule.
Well, Your Honor, I think we have to take the Supreme Court at its word. It's
but
the
you
law.
Have, okay, so you take it as some dogma, but you don't have any reason for it.
No, I think the
look, especially in a case like this, it's a complete accident who's the plaintiff and who's the defendant. You've got the identical case in Japan with the defendant in this court, or defendants, the plaintiff's there. Whenever you have opportunity for declaratory relief or for removal, the plaintiff does not, in fact, control the forum, right? So you'd be arguing that you wouldn't be arguing. The other side would be arguing, if the defendants had filed a declaratory judgment action in the United States, then that would have to proceed. Then you'd go to Japan and argue, no, they have to wait. I don't get it, right? I mean, maybe there's, there's no sense to this. Apparently, you don't think it has any sense.
Well, I do, Your Honor.
And of course, the whole citizenship is absurd, right? Because this is a dispute between Japanese entities.
Absolutely not, Your Honor. I think that's.
I mean, really, it's pushing fiction awfully far. Your client is a Japanese entity. It happens to be incorporated in Delaware. Apparently, because of some rules about foreign corporations investing in banks, right? So you incorporate in the United States. The reality is, this is a dispute between Japanese entities.
With respect, Your Honor, absolutely not. Your Honor's position goes against a tidal wave of precedents that says a corporation incorporated in the United States.
Yeah, but try to be realistic, right? Incorporating in Delaware doesn't mean, you speak English or something like that. You've got American roots or anything of that sort. See, on the one hand, you argue on this Supreme Court presumption that this is kind of nationalism. Americans have a right to American courts. But on the other hand, of course, you want to argue nationalism doesn't apply when you have a foreign entity that incorporates in the United States because of the regulations. Doesn't become American in any realistic sense. So you just seem to be operating a world of fictions, right? Legal fictions.
With respect, Your Honor, I think the law is very clear that a corporation formed in the United States is a United
States.
You're just
repeating. I mean, it's just words. Look,
what did that property ever do in Illinois? I'm sorry, Your Honor?
But I don't think your company ever did anything in Illinois.
Well,
it wasn't authorized to do business in Illinois?
It was, Your Honor. It was filed with the Secretary of State. It invested $10 million in Illinois real estate. It attended limited partnership meetings and general partnership meetings.
Well, that's as part of that Madison group.
Well, absolutely. But the whole point here, Your Honor, is...
This is all... I agree with Judge Posner here, but it looks like everything in this case is Japanese.
Well, with respect,
except
Your Honor,
this venue here.
On the contrary, this is an investment in United States real estate. Corporations...
By a Japanese company.
It doesn't matter what
the shareholders
are.
It matters to me, actually.
Well, Your Honor,
you're asking us to inhabit a really fictional world. Let me ask you a different question. On your view, you've got these mirror image cases, one in Japan, one in Chicago. Now, is this a race to see who can get a judgment first that might be used as race judicata in the other case?
I don't know what the defendant's motives were, Your Honor. But as a preliminary matter, these are not...
Hey, come on, let's be realistic. How is this going to proceed? On your view, there are going to be parallel suits, Japan and the United States. Now, one of them will end before the other, presumably. And is the idea that the one that ends, there'll be a judgment that will then, by principle of res judicata, block the other suit and the other suit? Is that the idea?
It well could, but I'd like to first challenge Your Honor's premise.
What other objects could it have? I don't understand.
Well,
if you're not going to go to judgment in Chicago and then continuing litigating in Japan and come up with an opposite judgment, what would that do?
Your Honor's question presumes something that is
true. Answer my question. What happens if both suits proceed and they end up with opposite judgments, then what happens?
I would think that whichever the first court to enter judgment, the parties in the other case would argue what collateral estoppel or res judicata effect that judgment had and whether it was binding and preclusive on all the remaining claims.
So what are the rules on res judicata in Japan?
With respect, Your Honor, I'm not qualified to say that, but that's a question for the district court.
Sounds like a mess to me.
Well, it could be a mess, but this is a mess.
So what's the point of having this mess when you have all the interests here are Japanese, and they have a lawsuit in Japan, and Japan has a perfectly respectable legal system. Why on earth is there a proceeding in Chicago?
Your Honor, this is an investment in United States real estate. A U.S. corporation was formed to take advantage of United States law, the protections of United States law, the protections of United States court.
No, it incorporated in the United States because it couldn't invest otherwise. It didn't want to incorporate in the United States. Japanese companies invest in the United States without incorporating the United States. It's just a quirk that they had to incorporate.
Well, Your Honor, that's a presumption that I don't think is supported by the record. The record shows that USO Corporation was formed at the direction of these defendants specifically in order to obtain the protections of United States law, tax benefits, access to courts, legal protections. And I think this court has an obligation to credit that. We have a United States plaintiff suing in the United States for an injury in connection with a United States investment.
I don't see why you say we have to give controlling weight to the fact it's incorporated in the United States. I wish you had a reason rather than just an assertion.
Well, the Supreme Court has said that a plaintiff's choice of
that's
form...
That's not a reason. That's an appeal to authority. As I say, there are senseless rules, but it's always comforting to a judge if there's some sense to a rule that you're relying on.
I think the plaintiff is in the best choice to determine what forum is most convenient for that plaintiff.
Yes, but there are parties on the other side. Their convenience, I don't know why their convenience is any less worthy of consideration by an American court than the plaintiff.
I'm not saying it is per se less convenient, but the Supreme Court has set down...
per se. Why? Well, it's per se about it.
No, Your Honor, there is
why should the defendants be given less consideration than the plaintiffs?
I don't think they are given less consideration, Your Honor. They have convenience factors that they can argue as to why the case should be tried somewhere else.
But why is there a thumb? Why is there a thumb on the scale?
There's a thumb on the scale, Your Honor, because both the state of Illinois and the United States federal courts have determined that it is in the interest of government, essentially an essential government service, to provide a forum for United States citizens to get a fair opportunity to vindicate their claims.
They can have a fair opportunity in Japan.
Well, then the Congress could disband the United States courts, but Congress hasn't elected to do that. Congress had established the courts, given them jurisdiction, and the Supreme Court has found very narrow circumstances.
What's in which interest in the United States is to have Japanese companies fighting in an American court?
Well,
why should American taxpayers pay the time of judges and so on to hear this litigation between Japanese entities?
I think the United States has a very strong interest in providing a safe forum for investment in the United States. The United States benefits economically from having foreign investment in the United States. And part of providing those protections is no different than the securities markets. The United States has...
Japan wants to protect its citizens.
And I'm not saying that they don't. What I'm saying, Your Honor, though, is that the district court failed to provide to apply the law that is required to
be evaluating
those interests.
We wouldn't like it if Japan had this presumption that you claim we have.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
We wouldn't like it if Japan had this presumption.
I think Japan does have a presumption. And had the defendants sought to file first, it may well be that the Japanese court would have proceeded. In fact, the Japanese court is proceeding on some, but not all.
But do you think the Japanese have the same form non-convenience presumption that you say the Supreme Court asserted?
I'm not an expert on Japanese law, Your Honor, but I believe there was a finding in connection with the declaratory action, judgment action filed by Mizuho, that Japan was an appropriate forum for the resolution.
That's a different question. My question is whether Japan has a similar presumption.
I couldn't answer that, Your Honor. I'm not qualified to practice law in Japan.
But you don't have to be qualified to practice law in Japan to know something about it.
Well, Your Honor, with respect, I don't know what the Japanese presumption would be. What is clear, though, Your Honor, is that the district court changed the rule that the Supreme Court has directed courts to apply, essentially substituting a balance of convenience test for the presumption and the necessity of the defendant to prove oppressiveness and vexation. The district court didn't make findings that would support that.
Is your argument stronger with respect to one of these counts than it is with respect to the other?
Well, Your Honor, I think the argument, there's two separate arguments. One is the district court simply applied the wrong framework. Another argument is the district court essentially rewrote the complaint. It simply disregarded 10 years' worth of alleged misconduct by these defendants and said that she wasn't going to consider that at all because she found that the forum nonconvenience test would be dependent upon what she called the expropriation claims. But the expropriation claim was simply a conversion of assets in a bank account, dollars in a bank account, that occurred at the end of what's been alleged in the complaint to be a 10-year, essentially, pattern of misconduct. And what the district court did was completely disregard, essentially, the first 10.5 years and focused only on the last six
Let
months.
Let me look at it from another perspective, then, the public interest factors. Is there a stronger interest in the United States serving as a forum with respect to one of these counts than with respect to the other?
I think the United States' interest is stronger in the profit skimming claims, Your Honor, because that involves the operation of a United States limited partnership by a Japanese corporation, a Japanese company that would set up a U.S. corporation. Tower Realty was a U.S. company capitalized with billions of dollars of assets that allegedly skimmed profits from a United States limited partnership in connection with a United States real estate investment.
Now, with respect to that claim, there is a colorable argument, at least, that United States law would apply to the merits of that claim. Now, I understand that under the Reno case, that's not outcome determinative. But do we have any indication as to whether the Japanese courts would, in fact, apply or even consider the application of United States law to that claim?
I don't think we do, Your Honor. What I think we do know is that the profit-skimming claim is not before the Japanese courts at this time. Mizuho, when it filed its declaratory act judgment action, didn't address those
claims.
Well,
what about your don't you have a counterclaim there?
We don't at this time, Your Honor.
That's pretty reckless.
Well, Your Honor,
no counterclaim to a declaratory judgment action?
My understanding, Your Honor, is that the Japanese court has asked whether the plaintiff intends to file a counterclaim, and the plaintiff has indicated an intent to file what they call a conditionary counterclaim, dependent on resolution.
You are going to file. This profit skimming claim, how much money is involved in it?
There's not a damnum in the complaint, Your Honor, and that's because all of the information about that claim is within the possession of the defendants.
Well, I don't understand. I think it's very small. I think it must be tiny. Because I think it's a percentage of a small number, isn't it?
Well, it is a percentage of a large number, Your Honor. The initial
investment
here was 10.
Your company's interest in these profits is small.
Well, it is small as a percentage. It is not small as an absolute dollar amount. The initial investment here was $10 million. It generated close to $500,000 a year in income for 2 years.
Right, $500,000 a year in income. And what percentage of that $500,000 is your client's entitlement, your client's share of the $500,000?
We believe it's substantial, but we're not able to quantify it.
Well, you don't know what – wait, I don't understand you. I understand why you might not know how much had been skimmed. But I don't understand how you don't understand what your interest in the income is.
Oh, from the partnership. I misunderstood your question. It's 3%, Your Honor.
Well, 3% of $500,000 is only $15,000.
No, Your Honor, 3% of the entire value of the property.
Yes, I know, but it's only yielding $500,000 a year.
To USO.
Yes. Pardon?
To USO, not to the partnership.
You get $500,000 a year.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So what percentage of that do you think was skimmed?
Let's say it's 25% or 10%. We don't know, but let's assume
it's... Well, if it's 10%, it's only $50,000 a year.
For 10 years.
That's only $500,000.
It's over the jurisdictional...
No, no, but look, you've got a tail wagging a dog because your other claim is, what, $6 million or something?
Yes, Your Honor.
So this is like 10%, maybe. Could be much less.
Let's assume the expropriation claim wasn't brought at all. We would still satisfy the jurisdiction.
No, I understand you. It's not a jurisdictional. I'm following up on Judge Ripple's question. I'm interested in whether the profit skimming claim is substantial enough that if everything else were pointing to Japan and the profit skimming were pointing to the United States, it would make sense to...
Your Honor, I believe under the Duha case, the court would have to balance both factors.
Right.
And if it found that the claim with respect
to the size would be relevant, right?
No, Your Honor. I believe if there was...
Really, if there's only 10 cents involved, still you'd say, oh, well,
I think
beans of the American company.
I think then we'd be under the jurisdictional amount. But I think
all right, $75,100.
I think that it would
be... It's irrelevant. You have a... $100 million claim that should be litigated in Japan, $75,000 in the United States. The whole case goes into the United States. That's your argument.
That would be our argument, yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Feigl, how related are these claims? Are they really, couldn't they very easily be treated separately?
I think they could be treated separately. It is part of an alleged pattern of conduct that spanned 10 years. But you can divide them contemporaneously, chronologically, because the period of time when USO was an investor in the tower and PWT Limited Partnership owned the tower, it's a profit skimming claim. Afterwards, after the sale of the tower, at that point it's a conversion of the proceeds or the profits from the sale of the tower, and it's a separate claim. Either one of them would be sufficient to stand.
Are you accepting the proposition that with respect to the profit skimming claim, the Japanese courts would in fact exercise jurisdiction over it?
I don't know one way or the other, Your Honor. What I do know is that the evidence before the district court established that it would be impossible to develop that claim because Japanese discovery rules don't permit depositions, don't permit the production of documents, and most importantly, don't permit the production of internal corporate deliberations, which would mean that any discussions about how the limited partnership was managed, how the decisions were made to allocate expenses and profits.
Certainly the Japanese have some way of taking care of profit skimming claims. I doubt they just let them pass. There must be some way that these are investigated and brought before the courts.
Well, I believe that USO's position before the district court, supported by expert testimony, was that the discovery mechanisms available in Japan would not allow them meaningful discovery on those claims. And as a result, there would be no point in bringing those claims in Japan, which is one of the many reasons that were brought here in the United States.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Feigl.
Thank you,
Mr. Sato?
May it please the court. I'd like to first address the question raised about the reason for the difference that's being given to the choice of forum by the plaintiff in a typical case. And the reason for that, as acknowledged by the district court, is that in a typical case when a U.S. citizen is bringing a lawsuit in a U.S. state, there is a presumption, you can presume that there is a convenience, that the forum is convenient for that U.S. party. That's the reason for the presumption that the difference is given. And that is, you can see the language that affecting Piper and the cases following Piper. And
I thought the reason for the presumption was that the plaintiff carries the burden of proof and has to marshal the case and be the one to go forward. So you want to respect the choice of forum that the plaintiff has selected, unless these other factors go heavily in sending the case to some other.
Your Honor, my understanding of the Supreme Court precedent is this: as far as forum nonconvenience determination is considered, the key issue boils down to the balancing of the convenience, and this presumption issue, or this giving how much difference to the choice of forum issue, really boils down again to the balancing of the convenience. And that's, I believe, is a bit separate from the who has the burden in the substance of the case.
No, that sounds more like 14-4A transfer jurisdiction than it does forum nonconvenience. In forum nonconvenience, Gulf Oil says there are certain private and public factors that have to be weighed. It's not simply a balance of convenience.
I agree, Your Honor. In a case where a U.S. citizen is choosing a home forum, in that case, it's still balancing the convenience. However, the great difference must be given to the plaintiff's choice of forum. And again, the reason is, in typical case, the convenience is presumed in that situation. And you know, our point about this issue is actually twofold. Number one, we don't believe this issue of the how much difference to be granted to the plaintiff's choice of forum presents any real issue in this case, because when you look at the district court's finding, there the Judge Lefkoe said, well, even if you were to give greater difference, which is the heightened level difference, to the choice of forum here, the result would be the same. The case should be dismissed for forum nonconvenience because the public interest factors and private interest factors, they overwhelmingly favor the Japanese forum. And so it was clear that district court was aware of this heightened degree of difference to be given, and then, in fact, granted that degree of difference in reaching the result below, although that was admittedly an alternative finding. Now, here, the district court was also justified in saying, well, that degree of the heightened degree of difference was didn't have to be granted as to this particular plaintiff. And the reason is this: USO, as your owners pointed out earlier, USO, in when you look at this case from the practical perspective, US for all the purposes, for all the practical purposes, are located in Japan. It has its address in Japan. It had its bank account in Japan. Under the partnership agreement, Madison Club 90 partnership agreement that's in the question here, its official address, both its
Does
official
Does Japan
address.
Have a forum nonconvenience doctrine?
I'm not familiar on that point, Your Honor.
Well, what about discovery? Mr. Feigl suggested that discovery in Japanese law is very, very limited. So, actually pursuing Judge Ripple's question, so in Japan, if you wanted to prove a profit-skimming case, what kind of discovery resources would you have, if any?
There has been, we've submitted expert opinion by our Japanese counsel on that point, and admittedly, the discovery rules in Japan is somewhat limited compared to the U.S. discovery rules. However, there is a way of you can obtain certain amount of document discovery, you can gain witness testimonies. So, and in fact, it's demonstrated that this type of case can be litigated in Japan. I think has been amply demonstrated in this case by the very fact that already two courts, one court has already determined this as to the expropriation claim in Japan, and as to the as to our declarative judgment suit, the case has already proceeded to a trial stage. So I believe it's been amply shown that this type of claim can be.
Is it true there are no depositions in Japan?
I understand that it's correct, Your Honor.
Mr. Vidal also said you can't subpoena internal documents of a corporation?
Your Honor, I'm not familiar with that. Your Honor, I believe there has been some specific precedent as to certain specific type of corporate minute of a certain company that may be beyond Japanese discovery. Beyond that, I'm not familiar with that. Now, as to this carving out of the skimming claim, USO claims that the skimming claim should be somehow carved out of this case and litigated separately here because they are somehow, that skimming claim is somehow more US-oriented. Now, what is the skimming claim? Now, skimming claim, in essence, is this. CORE, as the general partner of Madison Club 90, skimmed profits under the control of and for the benefit of Mizuho. Now, that's the claim. Now, where did this skimming took place? It had to take place within Madison Club 90. Now, Madison Club 90 was in Japan. According to its own partnership agreement, its Madison Club 90 partnership's principal place of business was in Japan. According to its own partnership agreement, its bank account, principal bank account from which the funds were sent to USO was in Japan. So the location of the skimming itself was in Japan. Now, where were the alleged victims? Now, the alleged victim, USR, as I touched on earlier, was located in Japan. Its official business, official address was in Japan. Its notice address was in Japan. And also, the funds, the bank account where they received the funds from Madison Club 90 was also located in Japan. Now, and all the known individuals related to USO, including officers and directors, they are all in Japan. So the, all the victims, known victims of this claim, are also in Japan. Now, who are the alleged wrongdoers? Now, alleged wrongdoers are the Mizuho Bank defendants. They, again, are all located in Japan. Now, here the allegation is somehow Mizuho Bank defendants aided and abetted and conspired with CORE in conducting this skimming scheme. And somehow CORE, which is a separate company from Mizuho, became under the control of Mizuho. And all this, some type of control, exertion of control by Mizuho had to take place in Japan. Now, by the very nature of the claim, as according to their own complaint, the skimming claim is very Japan-specific. I'd like to discuss the witnesses that's been submitted by USO. Now, USO suggests witnesses, various witnesses, mostly related to the PWT partnership. Now, here we should remember that USO was a limited partner of a partnership that was Madison Club 90 partnership located in Japan. That was, in turn, a limited partner of PWT partnership. That, in turn, owned the real estate in Chicago. Now, under the PWT partnership agreement, the limited partner of PWT, that is Madison Club 90, had no real estate interest in the real estate in the tower in Chicago. Now, who are USO's witnesses? They're supposed witnesses. Now, they have suggested various entities in the U.S. They are the towers management firm, PwC Partnerships accountant, that's KPMG, PwC Partnerships advisor, Chase Manhattan, the UBS, and PwC Partnerships general partners, that's Yasuda and Daido. Again, PwC Partnership is, you know, remembering the multi-tiered structure we have here, USO was not a partner in the PwC Partnership. USO was a partner of the Madison Club 90 Partnership, which was in turn the partner of PwC Partnership. So the flow of the fund into the PwC is not the question here, and flow of the fund into Madison Club 90 is not the question here either. The question here is the flow of the funds from the Madison Club 90 to USO, and that flow of the fund took place all in Japan.
What about conditioning dismissal on Japan, on your clients making available documents and other evidence in Japan that would be discoverable in the United States?
We vehemently oppose that suggestion. You know, I think that would create a problem of anyone who has essentially foreign claim being able to bring a case here, and somehow by keeping the case through the foreign non-convenience dismissal stage, going back to the foreign country and obtaining discovery. And that's the exact concern we had throughout this case. We have always, our position has always been this case is a way of obtaining U.S.-style discovery while foreign dispute. Now, I'd like to point out what Judge Posner, you pointed out earlier. If the both cases were to proceed, both the cases in Japan and the case here are to proceed, that would create the exact problem of having a piecemeal litigation that form non-convenience doctrine tries to avoid.
Does Japan have a concept of res judicata similar to our?
I don't know the answer to that, Diana. I'd like to also point out USO has filed countersuit to the declaratory judgment claim, and that was by the direction of the Japanese court. I understand that is somewhat conditional, and in any event, they chose not to raise the skimming claim in that context. About the point, the size of the skimming claim, our position has always been the skimming claim is insignificant in the context of this case. And we are talking about something that supposedly have taken place over a 10-year span up to 2001. That was the time then when the Payne River Tower was sold. Now, there is no claim that the USO had demanded accounting. They had somehow acted on this earlier, and there's no indication beyond. They are only saying on information belief, we feel somehow Mitsuo exerted some power over Core and somehow made them inflate the management fees. Now, so our position is, as you said, Yano, exactly this would create the problem of tail wagging and the dog issue. USO's counsel just raised the Duha as the controlling president. Now, Duha case is very different. Now, there, the claim was for the wrongful termination, and the claims that were separated out and considered separately for the foreign non-convenience issues were Now, Duha, the plaintiff in that case, was claiming when he was located in Argentina, he was wrongfully terminated after making complaints about FCPA problems within that company. Now, there are other claims Duha raised, such as, well, he let the company use his residence while he was being employed, and that somehow he should be paid for that. And those are totally separate claims and had nothing, you know, surrounding circumstances are different. And that's a totally different situation from our case, where both in skimming and expropriation claim, there seems to be this whole allegation of some wide scheme by Mizuho of somehow having control over third parties, somehow having control by USO. And so our position is Duha case is distinguishable.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Sato. Your time has expired. Mr. Feigl, does he have any time? Well, we'll give you a minute. Time expires.
Thank you, Your Honor. A couple points. First of all, going back to the district court's analysis here, Your Honor, even though she found the factors overwhelmingly favor Japan, she found those essentially with her thumb on the scale, that she thought the only significant aspect of this complaint was the expropriation claim. She completely failed to consider the profit skimming claim, which are standalone
claims. She discussed it.
She mentioned it, but she said that she found them secondary in nature, not significant, and declined to consider them. She didn't consider any of the facts related to the profit skimming claims in connection with the balancing that she conducted. And as a result, there's no findings below as to where the appropriate forum is for the profit skimming claims.
So you want to split the case in two?
Well,
I know you, that's not your prior. Is that, would that be your secondary contention?
It would, Your Honor.
If you were eventually to ever win anything here, who gets the money?
USO Corporation would receive the money.
USO Corporation is this bankrupt.
No, Your Honor. USO is not bankrupt. Its parent, Asahi Kogyo,
yeah,
is
bankrupt. So where does the money go?
Well, that money, I believe, would go to the bankruptcy estate and Mr. Okamoto, who is also bankrupt, who is the individual who's behind some of this investment, may or may not have a right to receive it. But ultimately, USO is not a bankrupt entity. It's a U.S. corporation outside the bankruptcy estate, and it would have it would be the beneficiary of any recovery here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Feigl. Thank you, Mr. Sato.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Move to our